I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This September series of podcasts is sponsored by Sweetwater, who, for the month of September, are rolling out incredible exclusives. Like Fender Custom Shop GT11 Strats and Tellys and the Walrus Deep 6 Voyager Combo Pedal. Plus major deals on coveted gear like the way huge Javelina Fuzz at a super low price while supplies last. And that's not all. September is Guitar Month and it's absolutely packed with mind-blowing giveaways. 48-month interest-free financing on many great brands and plenty of price drops, instant rebates and limited time offers that you won't want to miss out on. Did I mention that Sweetwater is now a Guinness World Record title holder? To find out more, go to sweetwater.com, stop by their YouTube, or listen to the rest of this podcast series. Hello and welcome to the Friday Special Series, a podcast by Guitar Nerds, hosted by me, Joe Branton, and the resident Guitar Nerds pedal expert, Matt Knight.
Good evening.
Every week on this podcast, we include a guest from the world of pedals, and this week we're lucky enough to have Josh Scott from JHS Pedals and the JHS Show on YouTube here with us on the show. Hello, Josh.
Hello, good to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on. Now, this series is sponsored by Sweetwater, and there's a good reason for that. It's September, which means it's Guitar Month, and Sweetwater have obviously taken this year rather seriously, going after the Guinness World Record for the largest functional pedal board featuring over 300 individual stomp boxes. So who better to talk about that with than the pedal maker who other pedal makers claim owns the most effects pedals?
I've heard this too. We'll see.
Well, we had Brian Wumper on here a couple of weeks ago, and he was more or less claiming that you owned roughly one of everything.
It's crazy. I'm in my office now, and a couple thousand, probably. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
This is the thing,
Joe. Every week you're like resident pedal expert, and it's like until we get a guest on. And having known Josh for a couple of years now, I would absolutely no way test my knowledge against this man.
yeah, I mean, you know, currently this man's website is him reading a book about electronics, so
yeah. One day I'll have we were supposed to have that done by the summer, but you know, we're just not in a hurry. We've rather enjoyed not having our website up, just letting people buy some dealers.
That's great, yeah. But you'd be able to test if it actually makes any difference to sales, just having you reading from a massive book about electronics. Maybe you should just upload more videos of that, maybe longer cuts.
I've thought about that, just different books, like bedtime stories, stuff like that.
I'm totally into this. This is a great idea. Now, I guess, first of all, you and Matt met, I guess, from when you guys did the collaboration pedal, the Boss and the JH pedal.
Did we meet before that? It might have been just the collab, but I feel like I've known you longer.
I think it was my first Winter NAMM, so that was January 2017. That was the first time, and then plenty of times after that, and obviously then you came to the anniversary event that we did in London in the September, which I get reminded of every day because we have a giant TV in the office that plays photos from various events, and pictures of us and Yoshi come up on the TV every day.
That's awesome.
So I feel like you're in my office most days.
That's a good place to be. Yeah, that's I guess I don't know. I feel like I've known you a long time, but I mean, pedal years go fast. I mean, in this business, so
yeah,
you meet so many people.
So I guess to crack things off, can we talk about the JHS Boss collaboration pedal? You guys seem like the two people we should probably do that with.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So how did it come about? Who initiated it, Boss or JHS?
Yeah, I think it was mostly me, but it's kind of a two-way story. You know, the moment I met Yoshi, so I had a friend who worked for Roland in the 90s and for years. I don't know the exact years, but he knew Yoshi. And I was at Summer NAMM 2015 or something way back. And he said, hey, I want you to meet Yoshi, a Boss. And I was like, absolutely. Cause I have the show now. So people know I have a huge problem. Like I collect and I'm like a, you know, I guess the pedal nerd stuff, but I've always been a huge Boss fan and collected them and studied history and read everything I could. It's always really been fascinated with the brand. So I was like, yes, I'd love to meet him. And literally I met him at that NAMM. And before the conversation was over, I said to him, we should do something together someday. Just like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? So that's like, I use the analogy, like this whole thing for me was like, you know, being like a playground athlete and having some pro team ask you to join the team. It's how it's done, you know? So I always do that. I'm always like, hey, all they can do is say no. So I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. And, you know, he just laughed. He didn't know me. And then we got to know each other. And he and Yoshi came by our booth every single NAMM, and he would hang out and talk. I think I've never actually asked him, but he's made some comments like, I guess he just liked the booth, and you know, we were just quite different from Boss, and maybe it was interesting. I don't really know. But at one point, I get an email from him. I think there was a couple people on that email. And it was like, hey, we're doing this anniversary thing, and I think it's the right time to do something with you. And I kept reading it like, did he really just say this? You know, like, and that's how it was from my perspective. And we met, that was right before a NAMM, an LA Winter NAMM. And I remember I went over to the whole like Boss compound over there and just met in the back office. And they, you know, they were like, hey, what would you do if you were to do this? So I had a pitch of an idea, and I took with me an old original, it's the dual overdrive that had the remote switch system in it. Like, I think it's SD2. I took that, threw it on the table, and I basically was like, we should do this, a dual overdrive and whatever. And that's literally how it started. And there was, you know, a bunch of back and forth, but yeah, that's the story. I mean, it was kind of it wasn't really hard to do necessarily, which is wild. It was really fun, and Yoshi's amazing. Matt, all the Boss guys have been a blast to work with. And yeah,
now of course you started off by like your first things were to mod Boss pedals.
Absolutely. Why it's so funny.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What an amazing place to be from when you were modding pedals to start with. Did you take the first pedal that you ever, the first Boss pedal that you modded, as you know, to become the Boss JHS co-op pedal?
So when we had that meeting at NAMM, and I was like, hey, we should do this like SD2 thing, because it had the remote switch, which inspired my red remote system that I use in a lot of my pedals. It's like, we could do this and you could switch between one or the other. And there was a lot of like, what should the two circuits be, right? That was like the first question is, okay, yeah, so maybe the JHS side is like the light gain and Boss is the high gain. Or we went back and forth. And honestly, I think it took a couple months of back and forth. And I got an email from, I don't think it was Yoshi, but it was from the Japan crew, and they were like, hey, we think we should do your Angry Charlie because it's really popular as the distortion, and we'll do our Blues Driver. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense, because the Blues Driver was the pedal I fixed. It was broken. I used to mod them. It was like my first thing in the pedal. So it was a really cool kind of tie back to, and they knew that too. And I think that was really fun. They kind of, that was one of the reasons I think they wanted to do the Blues Driver, because part of my story is I got into pedals because of the Blues Driver.
Yeah, of course.
So that was kind of a cool tie up there, you know?
Yeah. What, yeah. What a fantastic thing to get to, yeah. What a great tie back. Yeah, and of course it wasn't your first collaboration either. I think it was your first collaboration, but it's not your only collaboration.
My second. I did a small run. It was an actual release. I don't remember how long we made it, but it was me and Robert Keeley did it.
Oh, I thought the Keeley one happened after. That happened before.
It was,
right.
It was before, but we didn't make a ton of them. And that was quite an experiment because, you know, we're both kind of in the smaller world. And then you have Boss is obviously this massive, you know, much bigger company than JHS or Keeley. So that was, it's very different. I mean, I think when Robert and I did that, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone actually collaborate in the boutique pedal world. And then it was really fun to see the Boss angle, because it was like, I don't know. To me, the collaborations just show this really healthy pedal community, and I love them. I wish more people would do them.
I think what was interesting, because I was working in Anderton's, I think, at the time when the Steak and Eggs was the collaboration, right? I think I don't think you as a brand in the UK had particularly taken off at that point. And I think Keeley was moving away, had moved quite far away from obviously having a lot of modded like pedals, and was starting to come up with his own thing. And it kind of felt like the kickstart of when the pedal cabinet just sort of like exploded at Anderton's. And then, yeah, there was all this sort of boutique stuff. And I mean, really, you've kind of gone massively strength to that from there, because I think at that point you were still doing like custom orders, right? Like box pedals and stuff.
We were right on the end of being able to do that. We hadn't broke into the whole English scene like we are now. And really, so that would be, you know, the thing that did that for us was the Angry Charlie / the Andy Timmons signature. And that was, I give the credit of that whole kind of breakout to the Pedal Show guys. I mean, I think there was just an episode where they're like, oh, this is one of the best Marshall things we've ever heard. And I actually didn't see the episode. And I didn't know Andy Timmons, one of their favorite players, who's like an amazing player. He was using the Angry Charlie. There was all this stuff going on and I was too busy to notice it. But I just kept noticing, why is this pedal selling so well? Like, it was a pedal that had never sold well, the Angry Charlie. And all of that kept happening, and I think it was mainly Europe and South America, and it was just kind of this off the radar anomaly, like, who's buying these pedals? Like, no one's ever been. I was like, I remember saying to my general manager, like, no one's ever cared. Like, I almost discontinued this pedal. That's a true story. And then, yeah, that's kind of how it happened. So you're at Anderton's, and that Steak and Eggs is kind of right before that. So you have this, yeah, it's kind of a wild timeline of. And that's the pedal that got Boss's attention, ultimately, because they were like, that would be the best one to put in the collaboration, which is, it's just really funny. I almost discontinued my most fortunate pedal. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much, I think over here, more or less anything that is mentioned on that pedal show sort of instantly becomes sold out in the UK. It has that effect.
And I think your show, Josh, has the opposite effect for old stuff, because I'm pretty sure every time you do an episode on something, like, the price just triples on Reverb instantly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it actually does.
I've had some real... Yeah, it's hard because I don't want that to happen, but it's like, I'm hoping it'll level out. Like, the Behringer thing was bonkers. Yeah. I did the What's the Deal with Behringer, and Sweetwater Guitar Center, Musicians Friends, Z Zounds, all of Amazon, everybody sold out. It's like Sweetwater's still negative 300 or 400 on the FUD. Like, just crazy. And then, you know, I go and I t- talk about, and I didn't think about any of this. Like, this wasn't something I was like, this is going to happen. It's like, no way. So, you know, I talked, there was some, I talked about like the BBE pedals. No one has given a care about that pedal line ever. And they all sold on Reverb. It's just weird stuff like that. It's been, to me, it's kind of fun because a lot of these older pedals, especially some of the stuff that's not known and it is really cheap, I hate that people are buying them and trying to reflip them again. But yeah. I do love knowing that there's some guys and girls that have these older pedals and they've been on Reverb for like 6 months. They suddenly just sell them all and they're probably like, what happened? How did that happen? I do enjoy that. That's pretty fun.
No, we should talk about your YouTube channel sure. as well, because it's fantastic. It's a wonderful addition to the business. I mean, it's a fantastic way to have sort of a marketing arm as well, just having such a great, heavily geeky insight into pedal knowledge in a way that, you know, isn't really matched by anyone else on YouTube other than maybe that pedal show over here for just sort of level of insight.
Thanks so much.
No, it's fantastic. It's where I get half my information on pedals now. But you've also just you've opened a Patreon account now for so there's a Patreon for the JHS pedal show on YouTube to help you keep creating this stuff and making more content, which is wicked.
Yeah, what aspect you want me to just talk about it, or like anything you want to know in particular?
Well, I don't think we have yet, but we are going to sign Guitar Nerds up as a Patreon for the JHS pedal show.
That's super cool of you.
So the things you can get, you get the shows early on the Patreon as opposed to the YouTube, and it's going to mean that you can actually commission the sort of editing and making more shows. Does it mean that you're going to make more and be able to spend more time on this arm of the business?
Yeah. So the concept, just a little bit of background thing, to make it easier to digest the whole thing, is we started the show because this is true. This is the black and white truth. It's such a weird thing. We just started hating demoing our pedals. It felt like when you go buy a used car and like the guy won't quit talking about himself or something, it just felt like it got so annoying from my perspective.
You'll love the rich, lush tone of your new JHS pedal.
Exactly. Right. No, that's exactly it. And I just found myself, you know, we're about 70 episodes in, so we're about a year and a half every Thursday. So about 3 years ago, I was as burnt out as you could be in general. I mean, the company's really grown. I was traveling like crazy. I was trying to really find the passion for doing it all again. I love it. Like, I never stopped loving making pedals and designing, but it got personally a little difficult. Like, I felt like I was in a hamster wheel kind of.
Right.
And we would be making some content and like, it seemed like nobody watched it. Nobody cared. And then I would get on Instagram and I would pull out like my Les Paul with a cool old pedal. This is just on Instagram, 1 minute clips. And I'd just jam on that pedal, play a Pearl Jam riff or something, and it would get like tens of thousands of views and comments galore. And we kept noticing this because I just kept doing that to break the boredom and just have fun, because I enjoyed grabbing another brand pedal, looking at it, researching it. And I was doing that. I've always done that. And then I got to where I would be teaching these history classes at different places about electric guitar. So Sweetwater, I teach a university class. I've done a thing like called Off the Record, where I go into a record store, set up a turntable, pull out old records, like an old Hendrix record or Pink Floyd, and then have the gear they used on the record on stage with me and like teach the history.
That's so I'm very doing all cool. This.
Yeah. And I just fell in love with guitar again, the more I did it. And so we started the show legitimately just to teach the history. And we've never, you know, people have their opinions. I've seen a couple comments where people are like, this guy's just marketing and fooling us. But I'm like, no, I actually like hate demoing my pedals. We had a real dilemma when it was like 50 episodes in, I decided to show one of my pedals. That feels really weird to say, because you guys are probably like, yeah, show your pedals. But I really didn't want to. And I've really enjoyed like preserving the history of these effects. I get to meet so many people. I mean, and I get to talk to artists, and we've been able to travel and interview and capture these stories from the people's mouths. And like, that's the heart of the channel. So with the Patreon, you know, like I just went to New York. We were there for 6 days. We interviewed Mike Matthews on the history of electroharmonics, Howard Davis on the Memory Man. We talked to Death by Audio, and that costs money. You know, that trip's around $6,000 to pull off. If you've ever traveled, you get that. It's like, these are expensive to do. And so we're like, hey, let's launch a Patreon and let's take this to the next level and produce more documentary style content within our show. So if you've seen the episode, like Who is Ernie Ball or Who is Ranger? He's a Brit over you guys. If you've watched that one, that's what we want to do, more of that. And that stuff is expensive. I mean, we have to, I mean, if you put yourself in my shoes, it's funny. It's like, here I am, a pedal builder with a company to promote, but I'm taking money to go promote another company. it's super funny. And that's the point of the Patreon, is like, hey, you guys have seen us do 70 something episodes. You know where we're at. Like, we're legitimately loving this for the right reasons. If you want to be a part, jump on in and support it. That's kind of what it is.
I think the thing that I really love, and I, because obviously, as most people have been a Boss fan, you know, since day one.
Yeah.
And the one thing I always loved, because I remember going into a shop and buying it, you know, month into playing guitar, was the original Boss book from Japan. I think it came out in the early 2000s and it told loads of the history and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think the great thing about what your show is doing is kind of bringing that, the sort of pedal brand histories to life, like the one that you did on DOD recently. And, you know, I just think there's like such a rich history to tell with like the designs. And one thing I've always wanted is like to write a book about Boss, or actually, like I've said it on the podcast before, just like a full catalogue of everything Electroharmonics have ever done. Because yeah. I know Boss have a lot of gear, but Electroharmonics, like, kick it out like nobody's business.
I mean, they've released a compressor every week for the last 8 years, haven't they?
It's bonkers. Yeah. And when I interviewed, I sat with him for 2.5 hours, and he's such a champ. We've gotten to know each other, and we just went for 2.5 hours of my pre-planned interview to cover like the Big Muff, the origin of the company, the Memory Man, my Sovtek amps. Like, it was so fun. And you're exactly right. Like, I want to build those archives of information for everyone. Like, because the internet, what's so beautiful about YouTube is like my kids' kids will hopefully be able to pull up these videos. Like we're talking way down the road. They can't get lost like a book, or, you know what I'm saying? And to be able to interview, like, this is a problem I have as a researcher, as somebody that's trying to find the stories. Almost everything on the internet's wrong. And I mean, like, when you actually talk to Mike, or when you actually talk to Ernie Ball's grandson, or when you actually talk to the Macaris and talk about the tone bender, you realize, like, man, it's the game of telephone. Like, people have told this to this person, and they changed it a little, told the other person. And by the time you see that forum thread, there's really some pretty big issues historically. So to me, I'm really passionate about, like, let's tell these stories accurately before the people die. I know that sounds depressing, but that's kind of where we're at. You know, everyone who invented anything amazing in the 60s and even the 70s, they're at the place where we're not going to have them much longer. And I think, you know, the first pedal was 62, and the guy that invented that pedal passed away in 2018. I never got to interview him. And that really sparked me, like, oh man, I got to talk to these people. And that's what I'm trying to do. And that's what the Patreon really is about.
And you're right in the sense that the pedal community is fantastic.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Really close knit, which I guess makes it possible for you to do these interviews. You know, I mean, bringing it back to, as I think we should sort of talk about the Sweetwater massive pedal board, that was an incredible thing to get all those pedal brands together to collaborate on putting the entire thing together, and also, you know, to do things like, you know, you guys all went on the Chasing Tone podcast with Brian Wampler, and we'll get to talk about it. And I think it's wonderful that it's such a I think you even spoke about it on that episode, that it's such a community rather than sort of rival brands, as it were.
Yeah, I think guys like, man, the guys like Brian Wampler and Robert Keeley and Earthquaker, Jamie and Julie, and I could go on and on. It's just such a good community. And I think I think it might be our kind of our age bracket. It's like I think when you get to Robert Keeley and Brian Wampler, they're right on the edge, but I still put them in the younger crowd. I say that because they were building pedals way before me, Robert way before. So, but I think there's a new attitude, like with the pedal builders, that is, you know, I think we wake up and go, hey, if my pedals aren't selling and I'm not doing well, it's not that guy's fault. It's because I'm not making good pedals, you know, and I think there's a community aspect of like, let's get behind each other, support each other, and see the tide, the water rise, and every boat's going to rise with it. And I think like the Sweetwater thing is, it's an awesome example. Like to get there with those guys, our only agenda was, can we make this stupid massive pedal board work? And that's kind of a really good kind of example of stuff that goes on behind the scenes all the time. We're always helping each other out. It's totally normal to check the inbox one morning and have an email from a competitor that says, hey, how do you like this dealer? Are they good? And we go, yeah, they're great. Or no, don't use that dealer. You know, like we help each other constantly. And the Sweetwater thing, it was just fun because rarely do you ever see that stuff, you know, the way that we were able to do it.
Did you actually get one of everything, everything in the JHS catalog onto the... more or less, safe switches.
What they did is they reached out to companies they carry, and I think we all basically sent them what we wanted to send them. I think we sent one of everything except utility stuff. So we sent every main pedal, and some people sent less or more, but yeah, I think we did get one of everything. Yeah, pretty sure we did.
Nice. And they're actually, Sweetwater are giving away I don't know if they're doing, are they doing all of them or some of them? They're giving away, you know, some of the 30-odd boards that they made. And listener, you can win them. You just have to go onto sweetwater.com/giveaway. You only have a couple of days left to do that because it does finish at the end of September. But they're doing that, which is pretty cool. Bringing it back to kind of JHS, what was the first JHS pedal that wasn't a mod?
The first JHS pedal that wasn't a mod actually was a mod. So to clarify that, I used to buy Boss pedals, and I would modify the parts in them and put a sticker on them, or buy a Proco Rat, modify the parts, put a sticker on it. Well, the very first pedals that I released as originals were my takes on classic things. Like, as everyone learns, you know, the more I got into it, I was like, hey, can I memorize the Rat schematic, and can I learn the circuit, like actually know how it works? Can I look at a blues breaker, like an old English Marshall blues breaker? Can I modify it? Can I know how it works? And out of that kind of attitude, I released what was called the All American, which was my take on the Rat. And so that was the one of the first. You know, what's funny is I argue with myself over what the first was, because I didn't intend doing a company. I'm my own nightmare. Like, I'm such a history nerd, but I actually don't even know the first JHS pedal. It was one of three. It's like that thing where you're just busy, you know, and you're not, no one's sitting there going, hey, I should really think about this and take some pictures. I was doing it all kind of at the same time. I was modifying the Marshall blues breaker, which I'd used forever, did my own circuit board layout, and made the Morning Glory. I did the All American around a Proco Rat, and I did the Pulp and Pill compressor around a Dan Armstrong orange squeezer. And so those were all three kind of, in my memory, they're just in a blender. It's like basically probably, I mean, no, I know this for a fact. Within 2 weeks, those were all kind of done. And I was going to try to sell them and see how that went. Put up a really horrible website. People kept buying stuff, and it just kind of took off. Like, I never did a business plan or anything. I didn't know what I was doing.
I didn't realize the Pulp and Pill was one of the first pedals you did, actually.
I have some versions here that are really wild, like two knobs with a sticker on them, Sharpie stuff nobody's ever seen, because the Pulp and Pill got popular when it was actually made in some quantities. Like, the version 3 is when we actually were able to make a lot of them, and I had the circuit kind of really refined. There is a version 1 and a 2, and I probably only made 10 of each. I mean, they're so rare. I was talking to George Tripps the other day, interviewing him for an episode about some Line 6 stuff, and he's talking about early Way Huge days. He just kind of, we had very similar, it was so cool to hear him, because he's like, yeah, I'd just be in my garage and I'd like tweak this thing, and there's like one version 2 of this out there, and then I'd go to version 3. And I had a similar thing where people have just never seen some of the stuff. Like, there's a Morning Glory that just has three knobs and it's in a big case. It has no toggles, nothing. And it's so rare. There might be 4 of those.
Oh, wow.
You know,
Did the Pulp and Pill always have the XLR on it?
Nope. No. That was with the XLR came just from learning more and honestly just getting a little carried away with the circuit.
Do you buy any of them if they come up on Reverb or eBay? Like, your old early ones that you kind of let go and now you're like, oh, I've got obviously a bigger company and this is kind of your own piece of history, I guess, when you're like talking about other people. It's your own piece of history.
Yeah, I have a couple search things that, you know, algorithms that look for stuff. Like, you can go to Reverb or eBay and have it kind of watch for you. And I've recently, I had an old pedal called the Feedback Looper. I finally found one, you know, it's probably 50 ever made. There's stuff I'm looking for now that I, you know, there's just things that in the moment, you're just too busy and you don't care. And now it's funny, I go so deep into this history, you know, like the DOD episode or something. I'm on the phone with like 4 and 5 people, stacks of notes, and I'm trying to walk through the timelines of dates and people, and I realize, like, I don't even know some of my own history, and I've only been doing this for 11 years. Like, that's really wacky. So I've been trying to, like, there's that part of me, that's like the JHS pride, like, I want to make sure the story is straight one day, you know? If there's any other psychotic nerd like me out there trying to find details, I want to make it easy.
Yeah, I think there's, because that's the thing. I mean, There are a couple of resources online that kind of list every pedal, but sometimes it is difficult to get. Like, just going back to the DOD episode, it really kind of amazed me. Like, some of the info that you pulled out that I just, you know, had no idea on, because it's just not anywhere. It's not catalogued anywhere. Yeah. It just falls into oblivion, I think, with most companies. Yeah. You know, those guys left. You know, when I've been to Japan and asked about certain things, and that engineer doesn't work here anymore, he retired, and that kind of history is just lost forever.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. You know, the DOD, I'm so excited for that episode, because I feel like it was like I shifted gears towards more of that stuff. I did that one and it worked really well, because there's a mix of research, connecting with the real people that did the thing, and then having the pedals. And I've done, the only thing similar was I did the Love pedal, the history of Love pedal, which is the English brand. And I, Love Tone, sorry, I get them confused. It's hilarious. There's the American brand, but yeah, Love Tone. I did Legend of Love Tone. So I did a similar thing where I'd never seen anyone play all of them and talk about every unit in the history of that company. And so I did that episode. Then I got to DOD. I'm working on the original Voodoo Lab series now, which is killer.
Wow, that's cool.
I did. Yeah, like nobody knows how cool they are. Like, it's such a shame. So go buy them all on Reverb. And then, I'm joking. So I did BBE. And so a lot of what I'm going to try to do is, you know, capture these like moments in time. Like when I look at DOD, the Lamb series, that is like one of the biggest possible time capsules of the 1990s you can find. You look at those pedals and you see like skateboarders, punk rock, like it's the 90s. You know, you look at Love Tone and you see the 90s in Britain. You see like, It's so cool. I see these pedals as almost these like representations of an era. So I want to try to go through, I want to do the Dan Electro first series. I have some really fun ideas for the Marshall pedals, but yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, is like capture these collections that people don't even realize are right in front of them. They're kind of missing. I mean,
we did a similar thing probably about a year ago where I got every single one of the Dan Electro food series, because it reminded me of when I first started playing guitar, you know. And I'd go into the store and you'd see them in blister packs, and you'd be like, oh. And then, you know, you get more into guitar and you work in a guitar shop around loads of high-end gear, and you forget about these pedals. And yeah, it was kind of a fun mission to go and find them all. And actually, I realized that there's so much like Dan Electro stuff out there that people just never touch, and you're just like, oh, actually, these are, like you say, these are amazing time capsules of a small snapshot in history.
I love what you said, because it's like, that's where you connected with guitar in a special way, and that's what the show is doing for me, and I hope it does for other people. Like, we get really hung up on like, man, I gotta have this amp that's $7 million and this to do this, but really we just need to connect back with why we love guitar. And I think for a lot of us, it's these silly boxes that some of them are on Reverb or eBay right now for $20, you know. And when you play it or you get it in your hand, you just want to play guitar. So ultimately, that to me is the plus, you know. There's these things that we're missing, maybe. We're so oversaturated with the new JHS pedals and the new this pedal, that, you know, what if we look back at some of this really cool stuff that's actually really good, and, you know, you just kind of love guitar again in that way you did when you were a teenager. That's at least what it is for me.
And I guess that leads nicely onto maybe talking a little bit about the 1966 series that you did.
Which I guess
is kind of, everything you just said, like, distilled into a pedal, right?
Yeah, the 66 series, it came from, it really started when, so we have some footage where we come to London about a week a year and film. And a lot of the stuff we film, nobody's seen yet. It's, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do with some of it, or the timing's not right on showing some of it. But I sat down and talked to Anthony McClary at Solar Sound and Macari's Musical Exchange.
Oh, and wow. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, we have a 2-hour interview with him. We have some amazing stuff. And we're kind of, you know, it's tricky to figure out where to put certain things. But that kind of, something happened in that discussion where I connected the dots of the Tonebender 1.5, which is a really rare pedal, and the Arbiter Fuzz Chase, which was London. And so I got in this, like, this British brain thing happened to me, and I saw this crazy connection of all this stuff that happened in 1966. So the first pedal is 62. The first pedal is modified into the second production pedal in 65. That's the Tonebender Mark I. In 66, there's a 1.5, a Mark III. In 66, you get the Italian Tonebender made in Italy. You get the Dallas Arbiter Rangemaster. So 66 was like this ripple in the water that got much bigger. You go from one effect, two effects, and then by 66, you end up with this really cool, like, thing is happening. Pedals are becoming really cool. It would be like you've seen a car, but everybody's riding a horse, and then all of a sudden, like, half the people are driving cars. That was kind of like 1966. Like, pedals became a thing. And yeah, I just started noodling around with wanting to understand it more. So I went home, I started breadboarding the circuits. I was pretty familiar. Like, I've done Tonebender pedals in the past and Fuzz Chase pedals, but I wanted to really play around with learning what the circuit's doing. Like, you can build a pedal and not really know how it works. And I've done that, and a lot of people do that. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's fun. But I wanted to learn how it worked and connect those dots, the circuitry of those dots as well as the timeline and history. And I just got real into it, and it was so fun. I was like, I'm gonna do a small batch of these, and they sold out in 4 hours. I expected it to take 30 days because they were expensive. I mean,
yeah,
I did them at night. I did it like in my spare time, which is non-existent. And my kids, I taught my kids, they've been wanting to do stuff with me. So I was like, hey, I'm going to teach you to measure the gains and leakage of germanium transistors. And my 10-year-old daughter's like, yeah. So that was really fun.
Yeah, because I guess with those, like, a Tonebender's got like 8 components in it, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's got to be like carefully selected. And well, you almost have to think about it more than, yeah, just following
it's
a schematic.
Funny because you see a lot of comments like, there's only like so many parts, that's so easy. Those circuits will drive you mad. Like, the Italian has to have such a specific gain and a bias. You have to bias the transistor with a multimeter and get it locked right in at, like, you know, 4.5 volts. And it's really difficult. And I've built pedals for years. And I go down and I'm loving this project, but I had a couple nights where I was like, I'm going to stab the soldering iron through my eye. Like, I cannot get this pedal to bias. And yeah, so they're difficult, but it was so fun and just time consuming. And so they had to be priced crazy. But, you know, in next year, I have a surprise that I can't speak of, but it's going to be some really amazing vintage tribute pedals.
Oh, awesome.
And I can't say any more than that, but there's a lot of people like, hey, make these more affordable. It's like, well, I can't do that. That defeats the point of the 66 series. But I can and have and already did have something in the pipeline. Yeah, but I never dreamed the 66 stuff would be that successful. They've sold through batch 2. I'm going to end up having to build 2 more batches probably before New Year's, which is like unbelievable to me. The fact that people care that much is like so wild. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that's hope for guitar, you know, like people.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
they love these stories. They love it.
Well, I think this series, you know, and coupled with sort of your YouTube channel, has really harnessed kind of the inner nerd in a lot of guitarists and given them something that, you know, as you say, they didn't otherwise have access to. All this history isn't well catalogued. This is a new thing to be nerdy about. So it's, you know, yeah, great that you're offering that as a cool solution. Now, that actually brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Friday special of guitars. Yeah, I know. I've got through about a quarter of the questions I was going to ask you, which actually, you know, brilliantly segues me into sort of, you know, probably asking you if you'll come back on the show again at some point with us. But thanks very much, Josh, for coming on the show this week. It's been great to have you on. It's been super informative and super nerdy, as I really hoped it would be.
Yeah, I love this. I'd love to come back on the show. I love what you guys do. And yeah, maybe we can work something out when I cover some kind of weird, like, DOD-esque story again. Maybe I can come on and talk through stuff that I don't have time to talk to on something. You guys get a hold of me and, yeah, let's do something fun. That'd be fun.
That sounds fantastic. Now, listener, you can check out Josh and JHS Pedals on jhspedals.com and at youtube.com/JHS Pedals. Of course, you already knew that. And you can join us on all the major social media platforms or on Patreon at Guitar Nerds and the Guitar Nerds Club on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Well, that's it for the Sweetwater sponsored series of Friday specials, which means it is the end of the Friday specials for a little while. But we will be back very soon, probably with a new and exciting series of live podcasts hosted by my podcast host rival, Mark Packham. And you can be a part of that simply by heading over to our Patreon and signing up for the dollar tier. And for more of this guitar nerdery, we'll see you next week. Farewell.